Claudine Hemingway is a descendant of famed writer Ernest Hemingway. We bumped into each other at a party and decided to team up and dive deep into French history, but with a twist, by bringing a spotlight to those lesser-known creatives in France. This is History with a Hemingway.
Welcome back to Paris History avec a Hemingway, and today we're talking about the Grand and Petit Palais. And I love these museums. They're wonderful. I'm sure Claudine will give you lots more history about them. But the Petit Palais is amazing because it's free and it's so beautiful. And there's a cute cafe. But I'll let Claudine give you more on that.
It is a great one. And we just talked last week about the catacombs and also the Liberation Museum. The Liberation is also part of the Paris Museum, so it is free. But this area, and I was actually just there today on this beautiful 72 degree day in Paris. But when you first go there, before we go into the museums, when you go across the bridge, which we'll tell you about here in a bit, there is a little hidden secret garden, and it is called the Jardin de la Nouvelle France. It was created in 1859. It was originally named the Swiss Valley Garden for the Swiss Pavilion of the 1900 Exhibition Universelle. But then they got rid of the name, and I'm part Swiss, so this is very rude.
Yeah, they just cut out the Swiss.
Yeah, and then Nouvelle France is Canada.
Oh, that's hilarious. I love that.
Yeah. So the Canadians stole the garden. But in 2002, that's when the name was changed. So it wasn't that long ago. It originally was a colony of France until 1763. Two busts of the French explorers that found the area are there. There's Jacques Cartier, who discovered Canada, and Samuel de Champlain, who helped to discover Quebec.
We're learning so much about Canada today.
I know. My Canadian friends gonna love this. In 1910, it was the large monument to Alfred de Musset, who was a Romantic era poet, who also had a love affair with George Sand. We've talked about him in the George Sand episode, and then also when we talked about the writers of the Romantic movement. He suffered from depression and alcoholism, and would have manic bouts that would come between he and George Sand. Was quite the outrage of between the two of them, but he was actually a very prolific poet and playwright. He was very beloved, which when I first did the research on George Sand, he just sounded like this crazy guy. And then later when I did research on him, I was like, wow, he was amazing. He was really accomplished. I think she drove him crazy.
Women make you crazy.
Yeah. So right outside of that is the some names you're going to sound very familiar for the Americans is the Avenue Franklin Roosevelt. It was, of course, named after the president of during World War II. Right there on the corner was built on the land that was originally owned by Madame du Barry, who was one of the big lover of Louis the 15th. She's the one that we did an episode about her. She's the one that when she was taken to the guillotine, she was screaming and yelling and trying to beg them to stop and not kill her, when most people just were resigned to the fact that, like, yep, this is happening. but it was this big, beautiful building that used to be there. The Grand Palais itself has a couple different museums in it. On the back side of it, on the Franklin Roosevelt, it is the Palace of Discovery. So it's kind of like the science museum, like the kids' science museum. Back in Portland, Oregon, we had like what was called OMSI. And so that's kind of like, you know, it was a great place to go when you were a kid. It was opened in 1937 for the Universal Exhibition and was only supposed to be there temporarily. It was such a success that it was moved to this temporary spot in the Grand Palais. It holds science exhibitions and is a perfect place to take kids. Right now, though, it's not opened. We'll tell you why. Right now, everything, the whole Grand Palais itself is completely closed. And the Grand Palais, unlike the Petit Palais, which is an actual museum, the Grand Palais was only ever open when they did special exhibits. And they could do they could probably have 6 or 7 going on at the same time because the building is so big and has so many different entrances. And so the first time I went in there, I can't even remember what the exhibition was, but I was dying to see, I think the Biennial. And I was dying to see inside the biggest part of it. And so I bought a ticket and it was like 40 euros I could go in to go see it. It was this really amazing art fair, which is actually what they just did this last weekend, but now they changed it. It's the Art Basel. But the exhibit was really cool. It was all these different antique dealers. And there was one guy that has this immense collection of Napoleonic stuff. And it was really cool. But the building itself is really gorgeous, but it's closed right now to get it ready. It needed to be restored as it was, but they're going to use it for a lot of events for the Olympics in 2024, including having cycling and also running, going basically like track events going through the center of it.
That's going to be so crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. Right around the corner from that is the Avenue, another name you'll know, General Eisenhower. It was, all of these were named after his role in the liberation. On that corner there, so we're right on the corner of the Champs-Élysées, is a statue of Charles de Gaulle. So these are all these a lot of the names here all have to do with World War II, because one guy isn't, but another guy you'll know his name from World War II. It's a statue of Charles de Gaulle. He's actually standing on the Place Clemenceau. It's the Charles de Gaulle statue of him. He's in bronze, and it's basically he was a very, very tall gentleman, and he has his very big, long stride. When you went to the Liberation Museum, you would have seen video of him walking down the Champs-Élysées, and so this statue just, you know, copies that pose. So it's really cool to look up there and see him every year. They leave flowers for him on his birthday and his death, and then also for the liberation. It was done by Jean Cardot, who also sculpted another very famous gentleman in World War II, Winston Churchill, that's on another corner. On the base is his immortal words, "Paris shattered, Paris martyr, but Paris was liberated." And he said those words on the steps of the Hotel de Ville after the liberation of Paris.
And it's a giant statue.
I mean, he was a giant man as it is, but it's a really giant statue, and it is really cool. It's very, you know, you can't help but look at it and have like a little bit of pride when you look at it, because he's just, you know, just because you know what moment it was, and it was after, you know, Paris was, you know, finally back. I mean, the war wasn't over yet, but Paris was liberated and given back to the people. On the other corner is another statue, and that's of Georges Clemenceau. It was created by François Cogny. He is wearing a military uniform, and his coat, the coat he is wearing is one he would wear all the time. It was inaugurated on the 24th of November, 1932, 2 years after his death. Georges Clemenceau was known as the tiger, mm-hmm. He served, he was a huge war hero during World War I. From 1875 until 1920, he served in the military as well as in the Senate. And he had a great friendship with Claude Monet. And it was because of their friendship that we have those beautiful 8 huge paintings of the water lilies that are now in the orangerie.
Besties.
They were besties. And when Monet, you know, this is towards the end of his life, this is when he couldn't see and he had the bad cataracts, and he was like, "I'm giving up. I don't want to do this anymore." And then Clemenceau would be like, "I'm on my way to see you." So we'd go all the way out to Giverny and talk to him and calm him down. And then that's when Monet was like, "Hey, I was thinking about doing this thing called the Grand Décoration." And so Clemenceau was like, "Hey, maybe you should give him to France." And so on the final day of World War I, he gifted those 8 paintings to France. And I'm sure we've talked about the orangerie before. If not, we will have to. But he was involved in the design of the space they were going to be in, down to everything, to how the filter of the light and from the daylight to the lights on the wall, how it would affect the paintings.
I mean, not bad for a blind guy.
Not bad for somebody who was practically blind, but that's also because of, you know, Clemenceau. So I was really excited a few years ago. They had at the Orangerie, they were going to have this special exhibit. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I have to be back here in time for that." And I went there, and it was literally a closet.
Oh no.
It had like 4 photos of the two of them together, which are really cool, and some letters as they sent back and forth to each other. Bob, that was about it.
They could have tried a little harder.
But there is a Clemenceau Museum in Paris too. And of course, there's the Monet, you know, out at Giverny. But it is it's kind of a cool statue. So you just walk around there, go visit all these guys. And then, you know, the names of the streets. But the Grand Palais itself was built in 1897 for the 1900th Universal Exhibition. It was going to hold the art of France for the event. On the Champs-Élysées side, there are some huge sculptures on top. And right now, they're not covered up. I just saw them today. On the Champs-Élysées side, it is by Georges Récipient, and it's immortality defining the time. And it says they're all like just the whole thing is just beautiful. When it was time to pick an architect, they decided to use four of the top applicants that include Charles Gallot, who was also designing the Petit Palais across the street. Henri Delglace created the colonnade, inspired by the Perrault's colonnade of the Louvre. Behind the colonnade on both sides of the palace are mosaics that represent a floral motif, and Auguste Maximilien Guibert Martin also added on to their celebrating art through history. It's used for art exhibitions, as I said, and it also was a place that Karl Lagerfeld used to do the big, huge fashion shows for that brand I will not name. he did the huge fashion shows, and they were pretty amazing to see. Like they one time they ended up putting a rocket ship in the middle of it, and at the fashion show was done, the rocket ship literally fired and started to lift off. They put a giant Eiffel Tower in there. They turned it into like a store, a grocery store. I mean, it was always really amazing to watch, to see what he would come up with and his people would come up with. It's kind of cool. But now, you know, nothing is in there now. I mean, it's going to be open again by 2024. So it'll be cool to go see that. Right across the street is the Petit Palais, which I was just at. It was also built for the same exhibition. And most of the buildings, I should also mention, for all of these exhibitions over time, almost every single one of these buildings has been destroyed. The only ones that remain, there's the Petit Palais, the Grand Palais, the Eiffel Tower, of course, the Palais de Tokyo, which is also has the modern art exhibits in it. There's not that many. They have these amazing, you know, I should do just an actual video so you could see all these things. It just these beautiful, amazing buildings that they had that would line the Seine near the Eiffel Tower, and they'd take them all down, like tear them all down afterwards. I can't believe
they would destroy such beautiful buildings. And also those are solid buildings. Like, it's not like they're
solid,
like
solid. Yeah. Yeah. So it was just, yeah. I mean, this wasn't like a facade of like, you know, plywood.
Yeah. It was a lot of work.
Yeah. So it's like, I'll have to do something sometime, but it'll have to be more visual so you could see all of it. But it was like, it's some, those are that, and the things that were like ruined and destroyed during the revolution. Those are the things that are like, oh, but what if we could see it?
Yeah. The pictures, you can see pictures sometimes of the newer ones, but oh my gosh, crazy.
So the Petit Palais, though, I think is one of the most beautiful buildings in Paris. It was designed by the architect Charles Gallot, who liked to work in as much light as possible to bring everything in with glass roofs. The golden doors in the front are the real showstopper. And I know, I'm sure you've shot people for weddings there. And it's beautiful if you catch it in the morning when the doors are still closed and you get the sun, you know, like shining on it. It's just the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. It's all gold. Gold gilded. It was done by the sculptor Jean-Antoine Inguer. He also did around on both sides of it. There is a statuary group called the City of Paris that protects the arts. A woman is seen holding a ship that's a symbol of Paris, surrounded by the muses of the arts. On the left is the Four Seasons by Louis Convert. And then there's also the Seine and its tributaries by Maurice Ferrier. Part of the Museum de Paris, and it's the permanent collection. So it's free. So you have everything in there from the Middle Ages all the way up to like the 20th century. You could find Monet. You could find, you know, there's not the Impression sunrise, but there is one of his sunrises in there. There is this one huge room. There's the painting, the huge painting of Sarah Bernhardt, which we of course talked about before. We love her. There's going to be a special exhibit of Sarah Bernhardt next year in Paris. But there's some beautiful paintings in there. Like, I just love to go over there. I went to go see the two special exhibits that are going on right now, which were fantastic, but I just love to go in there and just wander around. They do just kind of move things around a lot. So sometimes that's good, because sometimes you get to see things that maybe is not normally on display. But the building itself, it's like the Louvre. Don't skip looking around for the building. Mm-hmm. The staircase, the iron railing staircase in that building are some of the greatest staircases you will ever see in your lifetime. They like are curved and they wrap around and they're just gorgeous. On one of the sides, so when you look at the front of the building, there's two kind of domed on the far left and far right. One of them, the ceiling, is by Maurice Denny. And I'm obsessed with the ceiling today. I took about 90 pictures of it because it basically tells the history of art in France. And there is, of course, Delacroix, but there's like Liberty leading the people with Delacroix standing there. Behind him is Monet. There is no information on this painting. There is nothing. The Petit Palais doesn't even have a guidebook for the museum. I don't know what the problem is there.
Yeah, that's weird. But
I'm obsessed with this painting. I have Googled. I've spent hours. I'm going to go to his museum outside of Paris to see if I could find it or talk to somebody there, because this painted ceiling is amazing. And it literally has like every artist in French history in it. And it's the coolest thing. And there's not even a sign on the wall that says who did it.
That's so strange.
It's really, really strange. But it's the inside there too is the courtyard, which you mentioned. And I just actually was sat out there today and had lunch. The sky was completely blue. It was absolutely beautiful. I had a lovely mushroom quiche and a glass of wine. It was just divine. And just, it's literally probably one of the prettiest places to sit in Paris, which is really hard to say.
And very like peaceful too, because usually it's not so busy.
It's so peaceful. It was not that busy today. I mean, when I went to see the two exhibits that were going on, there was hardly anybody in there. One was the Walter Sickert exhibit. He's English. I didn't know anything about him. And it was fascinating. And then the other one was a gentleman named André. I can't remember his last name, but he did a bunch of really great paintings. And then he also did like kind of like cartoon lithographs of some things that, you know, you would see these very famous that might've been posters or billboards on the street that he did. And this is back in the 19th century. And I was like, I literally knew nothing about these two men. So it was really fun for me to go in there and be like, hey, who are these people?
Yeah, I mean, they always, like you said, they have different exhibitions, and it's always something that you normally wouldn't know anything about.
So. Yeah, I mean, they did the Boldini one in the spring, and that was amazing. But those usually, there's a small ticket for those. Usually it's like 9 or 10 euros. And you could just walk right in, unless it's like when they've done like Boldini and some of those other exhibits, when it's like a lot of people go, that's when I would recommend. And if you're going and there's something coming up, send me a message and I'll tell you yes or no about getting a ticket in advance. But most of the time you're able to just walk right up and walk right in and walk around for free.
That is the best part. Sometimes I go in there just to wait for clients because Pont Alexandre Trois is right there and it's like,
yeah,
a walk for a cafe.
It is. It's such a great little place. And it was very, I mean, the cafe is pretty quick and it was really good. And as you mentioned, the Pont Alexandre Trois, which is probably the most, well, it's definitely the most beautiful bridge in Paris. My favorite is Pont des Arts, but it doesn't have the beauty of the Pont Alexandre Trois. Oh. The Pont Alexandre Trois is gorgeous because it spans all the way across the river, but it's different because it's very wide. So it actually is just as wide as the streets that lead up to it. Most of the bridges in Paris are a little more narrow. They don't have as many lanes, but what makes it so beautiful is these beautiful statues that are just covered in gold gilding. On the right side of it, if we're looking at the side that's on the right bank, when you look up, there is the Fame of Science by Emmanuel Frémiet, who also did the Jeanne d'Arc that's there next to the Louvre. And then there's also the Renounce of Arts by Frémiet. Below that is the Middle Ages of France by Alfred Charles Lenoir. below the fame of science is modern France. So you have these different kind of different periods of France that you'll see. It was all created for the 1900 exhibition again, as well, to get people across there. It was also built to commemorate the French and Russian friendship. Not so sure where that's at right now, but the friendship after the 1891 treaty signed by the Emperor Alexander III, and President Sadi Carnot of France. The first stone was laid on October 7, 1896 by Tsar Nicholas II and President Félix Faure. Félix Faure was a president that died while he was in office, while, as we shall just call it, getting pleasured.
So French.
Yeah, look back a couple days ago around Halloween in my Instagram stories, and you could read all the whole story about it. In the center of it is the center of the axis that runs from Les Invalides all the way to Élysée Palace. So when we talk about the Grand Axis, it goes from the Louvre all the way to the La Défense. There's a few shorter ones. This one goes from Élysée Palace all the way to Les Invalides, which is, you know, kind of fitting because you have from the embassy to the emperor. It was a metallic arched bridge. It was designed by Jean Ressayer and Amédée Abbey. It's laminated steel and iron. It was prefabricated offsite, just like the Eiffel Tower was, and then basically dropped into place. It was created to be the same height and width of the street on either side, giving it more of that big vista. It only took 200 days to finish the bridge. That's a miracle in the terms of how long things take in France.
Yeah.
Miracle. Wow. Like if they were restoring it, it would probably take 3 years.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Trocadero has taken 3 years. It's like, what are you going to
do? Yeah. In the center of either side of the bridge are nymphs that overlook Paris. On the downstream side, the Les Nymphes de la Seine represent France with their gold gilded, beautiful coat of arms, representing Paris in the center. It's topped with the glass reeds that glisten in the sun. Today was perfect. On the other side is the nymphs of de la Neva from with the seal of Russia. Both of them were done by Georges Recipion. There's 32 beautiful bronze candelabras that go all the way up and down it that are in the peak of the Belle Epoque design. And then when you get to the left bank side, downstream is a Pegasus that is held by war. That's by Leopold Steiner. And then below that is France under Louis the 14th. On the other side is Fame by Pierre Granier. And below that is France during the Renaissance by Jules Coton. Jules Dallo did the lions. He did quite a few big, huge pieces around Paris at that period of time. But it's a really, really beautiful bridge. When I walked through it this morning, it was about 9:30. And so it was not filled with a lot of people. But when I left at about 2, it was so many people and probably about 4 fashion and shoots, bridal shoots, everything going on.
Yeah, that's like one of the number one shoot locations. Good place for selfies.
Yeah, I got stuck in. I got stuck that I couldn't get through because of all this stuff. And my grandpa, in my grandpa's photos, he has a photo taken in 1972 on that bridge where somebody, it's like a fashion shoot. Like there was 3 young girls in very 70s fashion posing while a guy took a photo of her. I was like, so it's been that way for 50 years.
That's wild.
Yeah. But it's the beautiful bridge, a beautiful bridge to get a view of the Eiffel Tower, a great place to go to watch the sunset. A great place to be to watch the fireworks on 14 Juillet. And it leads to Les Invalides. So you look that way and you have the golden dome, which Les Invalides, the gold on Les Invalides, which is where Napoleon is buried underneath that dome. It's the only thing in Paris that's actually, they actually use real gold leaf.
No way. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So of course it's Napoleon. So they got to use the real stuff, but most of the other statues, when you see like the ones on Alexandre Trois, it's not real gold.
I'm going to tell my customers that.
Yeah. Say, sorry.
Not real. I don't think they expect
that. But yeah, but they have, that's why when they redo the dome, of Les Invalides has to be completely covered. Well, I mean, they have to do that with any of those things because gold leaf is so fine that if a tiny breeze catches it, it's gone. So, you know, yeah. You could stand below and hopefully get a teeny tiny piece. It might get you a couple of euros.
Steal some gold.
Yeah. Yeah. Or don't drink it like Diane de Poitiers did, because that's what killed her.
What about that alcohol gold slogger or whatever? They have pieces of gold leaf in it. My grandma.
Yeah, I don't think it's real gold. I don't think that's real. I remember when that was popular years ago and people were like, it's real gold. I was like, it is not real gold.
Oh my gosh, I remember seeing that my grandmother's thing and I was like, wow, drinking gold.
Drinking gold. But that's Diane de Poitiers thought that that's what's her will keep her young, and they didn't know that. So then years later, because her tomb was desecrated during the revolution, and then when they found her body again, she actually still had hair on her scalp, and they did a test on it, and sure enough,
it had gold in it.
It had traces of gold in it because she used to drink gold.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, make sure you tune in next week and check out Claudine's website, claudinehemingway.com. Book her for a tour and check in with us, guys, anytime. We love hearing from you.
Thanks for listening today, guys. If you're interested in learning more about Claudine, her tours, history, and the beautiful photographs that she posts all over Instagram, tune into her website, claudinehemingway.com.